The Tea Health Show, your medical lifestyle podcast, brought to you by The Tea Clinic.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Mark, this is the Tea Health Show, and today we're going to talk about our immune systems. Joining me in studio is Sister Elise. Morning, Elise.
Good morning.
Okay, so it's that time of year. Everyone is starting to get sick with the sniffles. I see that we have a new wave of the viruses, whether it's COVID or swine flu or bird flu even. I've heard a couple of people now with a diagnosis of bird flu.
RSV,
respiratory syncytial virus. So today I want to talk specifically about the small interventions that is so important for us to maintain a healthy immune system.
Okay.
So when you came in, I asked you, okay, tell me about the immune system. What is it that you've learned about the immune system?
Okay, I didn't want to go into that detail because that's what
But you read it and I didn't, okay. So.
So what I know about the immune system is that most of our fighting soldiers against illnesses is made in the lymphatic system, which includes your tonsils or your thymus gland or bone marrow, etc. And those soldiers are known as the white blood cells in the body.
So these are
your
T-cells and B-cells and
exactly.
Natural killer cells and all those.
Years ago, I want to say years ago when COVID started, we talked about cytokine storms, and that's the overstimulation of your immune system.
Yes, absolutely. Actually. So cytokines are basically neurotransmitters or transmitters, they're chemical messengers that affect the immune system, if you want to call it like that.
Overdrive of the immune system. Yeah. Is that how I understand it? It's correct.
That's when you have a storm. You need cytokines
to
identify and help fight infection. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then I was reading up about it, and then autoimmune diseases came up as well as allergies, and it's all related to your immune system balance, can I call it that?
Yeah.
But I think that's a bit too far if we want to talk about normal flu and normal sniffles, if you want to call it, then that is the lesser evil of all the other things that are.
Well, you know, but there's still viral infections. Your normal cold is a viral infection. Now, I think people need to understand that there's a big difference between a normal cold and actually having flu.
Yeah.
Flu is far more severe.
Yeah.
And usually it's caused by one of our influenza viruses or parainfluenza viruses, and there's a couple of them. And then we have the new strains of viruses like your coronavirus.
Which is presenting now again, but in different with different systems.
Yeah, we've it's a new variant. It's a new variant. I think one of the things that we need to understand is that your gut, the microbiome, plays a vital role.
I've read up about it. 70% of your response is gut.
Yeah. The immune system, every single cell of your immune system will at one point mature in your gut. If we think about it, it actually makes sense. The root for infection is through the air passages as well as through your esophagus, your digestive system.
Okay.
So that's first contact. If we take a look at probably the most important part of your immune seats, if we can call it that. It sits above the throat.
Okay, above the shoulders, actually.
Yes, your tonsils are sitting there.
Yeah.
The cells of a nasopharynx, et cetera,
and the fine
et cetera.
Hair in your nose.
All of those form part of your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And if
and
we look
saliva?
At what happens in the mouth, exactly, saliva and the properties of saliva is antibacterial mm-hmm. and antiviral. But when it gets past the throat,
mm-hmm.
everything that you digest or ingest can have a dire effect on your immune system. So the gut and the trillions of organisms that live in the gut is responsible for teaching our immune system what they should react to and what not.
Okay.
It's where we learn what's good for us and what's bad for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so important to understand that your gut has a direct connection to three systems. Well, all the systems, but the three major ones is the brain.
Yeah.
And we've often spoken about the gut as the second brain
mm-hmm.
through the gut-brain connection. Your skin, there's a gut-skin connection. We have microbes that live on the skin and the microbes that live in your gut, and they communicate. So anything that happens in the gut will have some kind of symptom on your skin. So if we take a look at just acne, acne tells us that there's something wrong with the immune system. Eczema, psoriasis, and other chronic skin conditions comes from the gut. So often we would tell patients with eczema, you know what, you have to stay away from gluten, et cetera, yeah. et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we're doing an elimination diet, but we're not treating the gut because all of those conditions are inflammatory
mm-hmm.
and inflammation starts in the gut. So if you can manage the inflammatory process, you manage the skin condition. And inflammation equals immune system.
Yeah.
Okay. And then our immune system itself. The gut is directly responsible for the immune system. So let's take a look at some of the signs of an unhealthy immune system. What immediately comes to mind? If my immune system is not functioning well, what will we be experiencing?
Maybe pain, for inflammation.
Inflammation, so
that leads
joints,
to pain.
Et cetera, yeah. et cetera, yeah.
Skin conditions, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Maybe sniffles.
Yes, we're constantly sick. We're not bedridden,
yeah.
but you just constantly feel sick.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things. Diarrhea, for instance.
Yes, immune system might be a little bit compromised. I would put that more towards the gut. What do you think about wound healing?
Oh, absolutely.
So if we take a look at children with a compromised immune system, or anyone with a compromised immune system for that matter, if your immune system is not functioning properly, small little scrapes and cuts and stuff takes far longer to heal. They have more inflammation and they also lead to more scarring.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that whole fighting of pathogens can be overwhelming. The other one that we see when your immune system is overactivated, like you referred to, is your autoimmune diseases.
But can I go back a minute?
Mm.
One step. What about fever blisters? Isn't that also a sign that your immune system is down?
Well, if we take a look at fever blisters, we need to understand that fever blisters comes from varicella zoster, which is a viral infection. It's very similar to the chickenpox virus.
Which we all have in our system.
If you've had chickenpox as a child, you know, that virus usually stays dormant in one of your nerve roots.
Yeah.
So its very close cousin is shingles, which we refer to as herpes zoster. Mm-hmm. So you have herpes infections can present as warts, whether they are on hands or feet or on the genitalia. So that's usually herpes simplex. And then you have your fever blisters, which is also a herpes virus. And then you have your shingles, et cetera, which is more varicella zoster. Mm-hmm. But they all fall in the same group. Now, anyone who had any of those will know that times of stress, whether it's physical, emotional trauma, can reactivate these viruses. So fever blisters, the immune system starts declining if we had a bad cough or a bad cold or a bad infection. Often a fever blister will reoccur. For me, fever blisters when I play sport and I'm in the sun for a long time, I know that I have to protect my lips because the sun exposure can trigger my fever blisters. Patients who get shingles, you know, they usually get shingles as a sign of either they're emotionally really stressed or the body is physically stressed.
That link is amazing. It's still brain connection, that stress response.
Yeah. Remember, your immune system, which matures in the gut, has a direct connection through the gut to the brain.
Yeah.
So we affect our hormone levels. Mm-hmm. Cortisol is one of the hormones that will play a role in this, where if we under uncontrolled chronic stress, whether it be from work or whether it be from caring for a loved one that's sick, or whether it's from exhaustion.
Or moving house.
Or exhaustion from over-exercising, for instance. It elevates the cortisol levels. Now, cortisol will elevate your blood pressure. It will release more sugar into the bloodstream. And it will play a role in your immune system as well. It suppresses the immune system. There was an interesting article that I shared with you the other day, and it was about that cortisol is actually anti-inflammatory and it's working.
Yes.
But you need cortisol levels to decrease at nighttime so that your immune system, which is an inflammatory system, can actually do what it's supposed to do. So if the cortisol levels, which is anti-inflammatory, stays too high for prolonged periods of time, you downregulate your immune system. So it's anti-inflammatory, but it creates a downregulation of your immune system, which leads to uncontrolled inflammation.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. It's quite difficult to understand.
Is it safe to say that our cortisol levels are elevated during the day when we are active, busy, et cetera, and then you need to go and sleep
so that you can bring the cortisol levels down?
Yes.
Cortisol spikes in the morning.
Yeah.
And it spikes with blue light.
Mm-hmm.
So cortisol levels, as the sun comes up and we start seeing blue light, that's when cortisol levels are at its highest. So cortisol forms part of your circadian rhythm.
Okay, but Dr. Mark, now, and I know we didn't want to go this route, but the other hormone that we need to lower cortisol or lower inflammation is melatonin.
Melatonin, yes,
so it's
absolutely.
Also integrally linked.
Yeah, melatonin.
And melatonin peaks at nighttime.
Yes, and with exposure to red light.
Yeah.
So melatonin levels will increase. And you know what? For the past couple of weeks, I've been doing a treatment pod which works with different wavelengths of light.
Mm-hmm.
So near infrared light and red light. And if the red light comes on, I immediately fall asleep because that red light, even though your eyes are closed, releases the melatonin in your brain. And, you know, it's the best power nap.
Yeah.
So, yes, melatonin and cortisol go hand in hand. If there's a dysregulation between them, not only do you disturb your sleep pattern, but you disturb your circadian rhythm, which disturb all your other hormonal processes, because all of them work at certain times. So it's that symphony of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Where if one of the hormones goes out of tune or out of pace with the other hormones, it creates bad music.
And it causes cacophony.
The cacophony of hormones, yes, absolutely. Okay, so let's circle back to the immune system. We want to keep this short and sweet. So what is it that you can do at home to keep your immune system functioning, especially at this time of year? What would you venture, Cecilies?
Well, the utmost in my mind is proper lifestyle. And there we can talk about sleep.
Okay, exercise. So let's stay with sleep. The immune system depends on us sleeping properly.
The old people always said, go and sleep when you are sick. There was method in their madness about that.
Sorry, I didn't turn my phone off there. Yes.
And not only sleep for 4 to 5 hours. You need proper sleep for at least 7 hours a night to reset your circadian rhythm. Am I right?
Yeah. We had the podcast with Dr. Alison Bentley. We'll have another one with her in the near future. On average, we need between 7 and 8 hours of sleep, and the best time to go to sleep is somewhere between 10 and 11 at nighttime. And the question that I always ask my patients to answer when it comes to sleep is, when you wake up in the morning, are you refreshed? Now, I am one of the people that can cope quite well with about 5.5, if I'm lucky, 6 hours of sleep. It's more than sufficient for me. When it becomes a little bit less, all that 5 to 6 hours of sleep is disturbed.
Mm.
I start feeling the signs. Not maybe on day one, but definitely on day two and day three.
Yeah.
The majority of us, especially if we are young, growing children, teenagers, going through so many changes, need at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
As we get older, we tend to require less sleep. I could never understand why my grandparents was up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
It just didn't make sense. And they would never have an afternoon nap. And as they got into their 80s and 90s, you know what, they started sleeping a little bit more. But you know what? I think you're from your 60s to mid-70s.
But why is sleep so important?
For them.
For the immune system.
For the immune system, absolutely.
But why? Why? What happens during sleep with the immune system?
The body repairs itself.
Okay.
The body repairs. So your immune system is part of the repair crews.
Mm.
It's not just first responders when it comes to infection, where it's your immune system that has to identify, okay, fine, here's something that shouldn't be here. So they work as spies,
mm-hmm,
and counterintelligence and intelligence. So, you know what, if you don't sleep enough, the body's resources to do its investigations to identify stuff doesn't happen.
Okay, that's important.
And if there is something, you know what, there's a small little controlled war in like the shopping mall. It never goes beyond the shopping mall because your immune system literally cordoned it off.
Mm-hmm.
But inside, it's a nightmare. Mm. And then the body needs to go and it needs to repair that. And that repair happens while you're sleeping.
Okay. That's important.
Okay. I think that's a good analogy.
It's a very good analogy. It's very descriptive.
If something spills out of this containment, now it becomes systemic.
Mm.
And now all the troops are mobilized.
Yeah.
So that sleep is the best remedy for getting better.
Mm.
Not lying on a couch, literally sleeping.
Sleep. Yeah. Yeah.
Sleep. Very
okay,
important.
So why is exercise then so important to strengthen the immune system?
Number one, your cardiovascular system will improve with that. We need proper blood flow to get all the required nutrients, et cetera, moving around the body. I think...
And also your soldiers are being transported in the blood.
Yeah, all your white blood cells, all the majority of your white blood cells are circulating in the bloodstream. We have immune cells everywhere in the body.
Mm-hmm.
But again, usually first contact, especially if it happens through the gut, et cetera, somehow these pathogens need to spread around the body, and they usually spread in the blood.
Mm.
So when we have a tissue infection, you know, they spread between the different cells from cell to cell. But the majority of pathogens move through the body, either in your lymphatic system or in your circulatory system.
Okay. Next thing I wanted to ask is food.
Diet is incredibly important.
How does that influence?
This comes in directly again to my favorite topic, the microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
To have a healthy microbiome, we need a diverse ecosystem. So if we think about what is happening to our big ecosystem. So let's take a look at Borneo, for instance. Borneo was one of the islands with one of the largest rainforests that we've had, with phenomenal diversity in different species of plants and animals and insects and birds. And as humans started realizing how versatile palm oil is, they've destroyed the rainforest and they've planted just palms. And that's disturbed the ecosystem. So ecosystems are dependent on one another, from microbial life through to your apex predators.
Mm-hmm.
If one of those links in the ecosystem is taken away, the ecosystem literally falls apart.
Yeah.
We've seen that, for instance, with removing your apex predators like wolves and bears. And that leads to overgrazing from your antelope. And you know what? That leads to the formation of deserts.
Mm.
So a diverse diet, rich in different types of food, feeds a healthy gut with a diverse microbiome.
Mm.
If we have overgrowth of one bacteria, we get a dysbiosis. And dysbiosis leads to gastrointestinal symptoms that we are all familiar with. The majority of times it's a diarrhea, watery stools.
But dysbiosis bloating. Is an inflammatory condition, isn't it?
Dysbiosis is just that the ecosystem has been
compromised.
Compromised.
Okay.
it's not necessarily an inflammatory, or it doesn't necessarily start out as an inflammatory condition, but it will lead to inflammatory changes. Mm-hmm. So diarrhea, bloating, pain, weight gain, fatigue, irritability, all of those stem from the gut.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important for your immune system to eat a diverse diet, rich in macronutrients, in other words, your proteins, your carbohydrates, as well as your healthy fats, but then specifically for vitamins and minerals. And here we look at the different types of fruits.
Is that in the micronutrients?
Those are the micronutrients, okay. Yeah. So, diverse foods. I always tell my patients, if it's got color, you can eat it. Mm. If it's beige, you stay away from it. Mm. Processed foods, those become a problem.
Why is that a problem?
Because they are modified.
Yeah.
And you know what? Even though they are sometimes fortified, like our cereals, even though they are fortified with things like zinc and vitamin C, they are still processed to such a degree that the body can't process them. Mm. So it becomes almost empty calories.
And that's the chemicals, full of chemicals and the preservatives that goes into that process.
Absolutely. And this is the movement towards more whole food. So whole food is not just there for weight. Whole food is there for your immune system. Mm. Weight is a chronic condition. So obviously, your immune system plays a role in any chronic condition. So it will be compromised with excessive weight gain or obesity or with things like anorexia or bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot absorb the essential nutrients and the ones that I think we need to talk about, we'll touch on in the next couple of minutes. There's certain nutrients that we need to get in for our immune system, but most of them affect, all of them actually affect a healthy gut.
Yeah. Okay, but I think then let's go into that then. What nutrients is so important for your immune system?
So we need to understand that because our foods are cultivated in different ways, the nutritional value has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the more processed a food is, the more chemicals it has in it, which will decrease its nutritional value. It doesn't matter what the package or the label is saying. Those foods aren't healthy for us. And we've known that for a very long time. Supplementation, when it comes to the immune system, is incredibly powerful. And here we're thinking of compounds specifically like zinc.
Yes.
Elemental zinc forms part of more than 300 enzymatic systems in the body.
Yeah.
So if you don't have enough zinc, you decrease the enzymatic activity. And now we start having a problem breaking things down or building them up. So enzymes can break down or create. And this can be anything from our hormones to neurotransmitters to vitamins and minerals, as well as proteins and the way that we metabolize cholesterol and fat, etc., etc. So all of those chemical processes basically rely on
enzymes. Okay, but
enzymes.
What influence does zinc have on the immune system? Because I remember clearly when COVID struck, everybody said we need to take vitamin D, zinc, and vitamin C.
Yeah, so zinc increases the activity in the immune system. So it feeds the immune system.
Okay.
Studies have shown that taking 40 milligrams of zinc when you start with a viral infection can decrease the duration of this infection by 33%.
Sure.
So if we take a look at what's happening around us now with the viral infections, the influenzas, et cetera, people are feeling bad for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I can just shave 3 days off that, it makes a hell of a difference, especially if you're a single mom that has to work. You cannot afford to be sick, or you can't afford your children to be sick for 10 days because you can't look after them for 10 days at mm-hmm. home. So it's also shown to boost the immune system, decreasing the severity of the symptoms, not only the duration. I always say that taking supplementation as we go into our seasonal change, winter, for 3 months is really, really a smart thing to do, and a little bit stupid if you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the vitamins and minerals that I would recommend is zinc. Now, with zinc, selenium goes hand in hand, and we'll talk about them just now. Vitamin C, but not in too high a doses. No more than 500 milligram per day if it's just for prevention.
Yeah.
If we are treating an infection, we can push up the vitamin C for a short period of time. Vitamin D, essential. And the other one that I think we shouldn't overlook is magnesium. So magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin C, selenium, zinc. Really important.
Okay.
There are formulations available at retail pharmacies that are good for this. What is important to know that if you have a deficiency in one of your vitamins or minerals, it can lead to symptoms and disease. If we have an excess, we create a toxicity. So it can also have negative effects. And this is not just nausea and stomach ache or headache because of toxicity. Toxicity with zinc, for instance, can suppress the immune system. So, you know what, there's a fine balance. And I think often we get it wrong. We all take handfuls of supplements and multivitamins without really understanding what it is that we are doing. So if you want to take something like that, you know, but speak to your friendly pharmacist. And if you don't have a friendly pharmacist, go to another pharmacy or speak to your healthcare provider. Yeah. So zinc, vitamin D, magnesium, selenium. Most of these trace elements, as we call them, because they're elemental, affect one another. So if you, for instance, take too much zinc and selenium, you can suppress copper, which is responsible for brain function in your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
It can also suppress iron levels.
Mm-hmm.
Iron is another crucial element in our immune system. If you don't have iron, and we actually saw this with COVID, patients who had COVID infections or viral infections suddenly dropped their iron levels, their total iron levels. We have, if we look at your iron study, you have something called ferritin.
Mm-hmm.
And ferritin is an acute phase reaction. So ferritin, being a protein that transports iron around the body in the blood, will elevate the moment that I have an infection. So you will pull iron out of your iron stores and out of the rest of the body and shove it and bind it to your ferritin level so that it can move around so that you can fight infection with that. And often we see that ferritin levels stay elevated after a viral infection, mm-hmm. and slowly the body starts reabsorbing the iron and the ferritin comes down and our iron stores can pick up. But usually after a bad infection, and you know what, we saw that when I had the swine flu, my iron levels dropped by more than 100%. Mm-hmm. And it took months for us to restore them. I had to go on iron supplementation, et cetera, et cetera. So iron is one of the other important things that we need to take.
Okay, interesting. Now, I also want to, while we're talking about the flu or cold, the lesser of the evil, is where does antibiotics play a role in this? When is it necessary to take antibiotics? Because I feel sometimes antibiotics are being prescribed
too easily. Too absolutely. Elise, I think one of the things that is crucial for us, and we hammer on this, whether I'm talking about aesthetics and training doctors in aesthetics or whether we are consulting a patient on hormones, I always say, if you don't make a proper diagnosis, you don't know where you are to start with. Mm-hmm. You know where you want to be. So think of a map. I can see that I need to be in Gubabis. Mm. But if I don't know where in South Africa I am, how the hell am I going to plan my route?
Yeah.
So the best option is to run around in circles, ever-increasing size circles, and hopefully one day I would get to Gubabis. Mm-hmm. But you know what? So making a proper diagnosis when it comes to, is this a bacterial infection or is this a viral infection? Is essential. Antibiotics do not work for viral infections.
So
we have medication specifically for viral infections. And any GP worth his salt at the moment, I think, is prescribing viral antivirals when patients present with the signs of a scratchy throat, a dry cough, a headache, low fever. Bacterial infections usually start with a temperature of above 38.
Yeah.
Viral infections often have a lower grade temperature, just above 36.8, 36.9. So viral infections usually have a slightly lower temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Often, unfortunately, and I think this is where the confusion comes in. When you have a viral infection, the immune system is fighting something. You're snotty, you're blowing your nose, et cetera, et cetera. So you create opportunity for a bacterial infection to take hold. And then suddenly you get a bacterial bronchitis because you've had a viral infection that goes over to bacteria.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit difficult, but yes, we are giving antibiotics way too easily.
But the main thing is, start when you feel off, start treating the symptoms. And
when you feel off, there's a couple of things that I can tell you that I take. Number one is I double up on my zinc.
Yes.
I double up on my vitamin C, but only when I start feeling the signs.
Yes,
I'm feeling tired and my body is sore. Then, you know what? It was that old, my sister-in-law believes in Barocca Carenza and ACC.
Okay.
With, you know, a Disprin. Stefan believes in Med Lemon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Med Lemon solves everything. I fucking hate Med Lemon. Tastes like warmed up cream soda. It's not my favorite thing to do. But Stefan will give me Med Lemon and a Disprin. And you know what? For symptomatic relief, that's good enough.
Absolutely, yeah.
So zinc, double up on your vitamin D, go to a high dose of vitamin D, go to a high dose of vitamin C.
And magnesium.
Magnesium, we add to that because it helps the immune system regulate, mm-hmm. as well as it regulates sleep. So, and get good proper sleep. If you are Jewish, you would know that Bobo's chicken soup really does have antibacterial and antiviral properties to it. So it's a good thing to do. I believe in colloidal silver. I don't know if people ever heard about colloidal silver. So silver we know is a natural antiviral, antibacterial. It's wonderful to give orally for infections. It really does help. I also often prescribe it for patients to nebulize with.
Yes.
Especially if they have stubborn phlegm and coughs, because you know what, you get that silver particles into the lungs, so it's not a bad thing. I also often tell patients with oral infections or sore throats to gargle with something like colloidal silver. So the old remedies really do work. Mm-hmm. Ginger, lemon, honey, cayenne pepper. The more recent things, curcumin is a, in other words, cumin, curcumin, turmeric, really, really good to help boost the immune system. I think all of us remember Shalene Surtee Richards. She was a good friend of mine. She did the ad for Echinacea. That really does work for a lot of people. So prevention is better than cure, or easier.
Or start early.
So for me, now is the time to supplement with zinc. I would average requirements of elemental zinc for adults in South Africa is about 25 milligrams per day. There are formulations that you can find. Vitamin D, I would push up to maybe 1,000 units, international units, a day for the next 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. Same with the zinc. After that, I will decrease the dose or stop. Vitamin C, between 500 and 1,000 milligrams. I wouldn't go higher than that unless you have an acute illness. And I wouldn't stay on higher doses than 1,000 milligrams for, I would say, more than 2 to 3 weeks. Then I will bring down the dose. Magnesium up to 400 milligrams a day. There's different types of magnesium. It's not your fizzy ones necessarily. It would rather be a tablet from a reputable company. I don't think if you can't find anything other than a fizzy magnesium, that it's bad for you. So I think there are more better preparations around that's more concentrated, etc., etc. But something is better than nothing.
Yeah.
Fortify yourself with a healthy, versatile diet, rich in fresh fruit, vegetables, dairy products. If you are sensitive to dairy, if you are one of the patients who are battling with irritable bowel disease or chronic diarrhea, definitely stay away from gluten products because it will make it worse, which will compromise your immune system in the long run. Mm-hmm. Again, probiotics essential during this time of year, not only for your gut, but for your immune system. Remember, the microbiome is responsible for your immune system. So a probiotic would go a long way. And you know what? I think those are the basic ones.
Yes.
My advice is the following. If you start feeling the symptoms of cold and flu, get into bed for 2 days. Two reasons. Number one, you're going to make everyone around you sick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just unfair. I think with being able to work remotely or working on your phone, doing phone calls instead of seeing people face to face – is a responsibility that we have. Yeah. So if you are starting to feel sick, stay at home.
Yeah.
And stay in bed. Watch Netflix, sleep. Watch boring Netflix. Don't binge. But sleep so that you can get better in 2 days instead of feeling like crap for 10 days and making everyone around you suffer because of your miserable face and snot nose. And what was the other thing?
Take your supplements.
Take your supplements. Yes. Okay. And 5-4, what does that mean? Am I 4-5? Ah, okay. No, we're going to wrap up. So I have I don't have my old Simpiwe here.
And
Jack is our producer is not here today. So I have a very stylish young man here in purple and dark glasses. He looks like he's at a rave. Are you a DJ? Purple socks and white shoes. It's fabulous. So that's it. Our time is coming to an end. So to wrap up, you know, but look after your gut, to look after your immune system. We are all starting to move indoors, which allows us to expose each other to more infections. Throw open the doors and the windows in the morning. Get fresh air into the house. Go for a walk in the fresh air. I can tell you that cold air or getting wet doesn't make you sick, because then we should all be sick in summer when we're in the pool. Get some exercise. Breathe properly. That's important. And just a note for patients with sensitive chest like asthma and emphysema. This is maybe a good time for you guys to wear masks. Our air is incredibly polluted at the moment. Take a look at the air quality index on your weather app and you will see that it's dangerous for all of us and for you guys with compromised lung function. And atopic diseases like eczema and asthma, maybe if you venture outside, it would be a good idea to wear a mask. Not for viral protection, just because of air pollution. Mm. Next week, Sister Elise, we are going to talk a little bit more about aesthetics. We're doing a series on aesthetic treatments on the Real Health Show, as well as on our social media. And I don't know exactly what we'll be talking about, but it will be about aesthetic treatments, what we need to know, and how we go about getting them done in a responsible way that gives us a natural result. Until next week, I wish you all the best in health.
Thanks. That was the Tea Health Show, empowering you with knowledge. Download all previous episodes on your favorite podcast platform. The Tea Health Show is brought to you by Tea Clinic.